Before we dig into this week's episode of Zen Founder, I'd like to remind you that we are helped out tremendously by five-star iTunes reviews. If you haven't left us a review in iTunes, we'd very much appreciate logging in, dealing with their clunky interface, and giving us a five-star review. Even if you don't write a full comment, you can just click that five-star button, search for Zen Founder, and submit that. That helps us gain more listeners and gives us motivation to keep doing the show. In addition, if you'd like to support us financially as well, go to supportzenfounder.com and you can help us out with a one-time gift to help with editing or commit to pledging a small amount on a recurring basis. Even if it's $5 a month, it all helps and it goes towards making the show better. And in this week's episode of Zen Founder, Sherry interviews consultant and executive coach Silvana Roche. She guides individuals and organizations to cultivate sustainability and success in the face of transition. When Silvana was 22 years old, she was given a new department to create and launch at a major hospital. At 27, she worked with the European Commission to train high-level executives on meditation and communication. Today's talk focuses on the human side of software, leadership, running a team, communication, and the things that, you know, a lot of us don't give a lot of thought to. I'll admit that me personally, I have to really work at these things. So hope you enjoy Silvana and Sherry's conversation.
We plan to talk through the issues faced by startup founders and the people close to them.
That overused phrase, work-life balance.
It is an amazingly focusing time.
This is what we do, you know, aside from our families, this is our whole work life.
I'm also known as Dr. Wine.
You know, this is a little bit non-traditional.
A little more zen in the startup life.
Those days were a mental struggle.
I have been stressed in the past, and I know that I will be in the future.
A founder and his or her significant other would both get value from the episode.
So I'm a political scientist by training who turned executive coach. So in a sense, the way that I see it is that I went from working on human issues at the macro level to the micro level now, one-on-one. And I call myself a holistic intelligence advisor because that just feels like it really describes what I help people do. It's helping them work on several planes, several levels of how they develop their intelligence as leaders. And I mainly work with founders, executives, and tech mostly. And what I do is I support them in managing their internal psychology to be better leaders. And the name, The Insightful Executive, was actually my first business coach that came up with the name because she said, you know, you are very insightful person. You're not giving people answers, but you're just kind of helping them get clarity and you're teaching them how to be insightful. You're also sharing these tools for them to do that. And she said, so the insightful executive, it's not so much about you as much as it is about your clients, what you're supporting them in becoming.
So the idea being that you're helping to foster the capacity for insight in the clients that you're supporting.
Exactly. Exactly, because we all have that capacity, and it's just a matter of learning how to tap into it and how to make it useful for how we lead and how we move through the world.
What does the word holistic mean to you? You described holistic intelligence, and I think that's a really rich term. Can you unpack that for me a little bit?
Yeah. For me, holistic means, I mean, it means whole. It means that we're looking at different facets of something or someone. Holistic also has that feeling of being healthy and being good for you. So it's a more comprehensive picture.
As opposed to coaches who might help founders focus most clearly on improving the bottom line of their business or one particular kind of business problem, it sounds like you're interested in helping with a plethora of problems that might, or strengths that you're cultivating, but that might contribute to the overall well-being of an entrepreneur or founder.
Exactly. And it's developing their holistic intelligence, right? So I like to be very clear about the fact that I'm not a business coach. I'm not going to tell you what investments to make, or I'm not going to tell you what decision to make for your business, but I'm going to help you develop different facets of yourself, different facets of understanding yourself in the world that is going to then give you a better vision and more clarity for how to make those decisions. So it's more like even working at the foundational level of who they are.
How have you made the jump from political science to internal psychology?
Yeah.
I mean, on one level, I totally get that because there's all these like dynamics and conflicts and forces at play. And I think that sense of macro to micro really makes sense to me. But there's a lot of complexity to the inner working of a human. How have you sort of figured that out?
Totally. It's a totally valid question. The short answer to that is that I've always been fascinated with psychology. I've always been interested in understanding myself, understanding the world around me, understanding how people interact with one another. So it was always sort of a parallel passion that I had as I was going about my life, studying political science and then later working in international development. I was at the same time taking courses in communication or taking courses in neurolinguistic programming, emotional intelligence. And another thing in my background is that I've been a world traveler my whole life. Since I was a kid, I grew up in France and then I grew up in Colombia and then I lived in New York and I studied yoga in an ashram in India when I took a sabbatical a few years ago. And that has made me uber, uber adaptable and it's taught me to draw parallels between things and also to draw relationships between things that seem to not be connected because I needed to do that for myself when there was so much change. I needed to find what was in common between this culture and that culture, or how do I adapt? How do I make myself fit in, right? So drawing strings or drawing lines between things. So I ended up, after I finished my studies, I ended up working in international development in Africa, in Latin America mostly. And what I was doing was bringing together nonprofit groups, governmental entities, and the business sector for public health initiatives. And I got really interested in what made certain organizations and certain projects thrive versus others that failed. And even though my job was to be a project manager and lead teams and initiatives, I started spending more and more time with the leaders of these nonprofits or the leaders of these governmental entities and sort of trying to figure out what was happening internally, how they were leading, why something was thriving or why maybe all of their doctors were leaving to go work in the capital. And time again, the answer that came back to my question of what makes an organization and a team thrive was leadership. And so my work then really, really became more and more involved in essentially coaching the founders of these initiatives in these different countries. And yeah, I finally realized that that was what I wanted to focus on essentially. I loved it so much. People started saying to me, oh, you're great at this counseling thing. You should be doing this full time. And that kind of planted the seed for me. I ended up going back to school. I had a master's degree at that time and I was like, okay, I'll just go back to coaching school now. And I got certified and then I continued to do the same thing where I would just enter in conversations with folks who had a big vision for something or who were founding their own organizations or companies. And again, going into this question of how do you see yourself as a leader? How do you do it? How are you developing yourself? Why is it important for you to lead in this way and not that way?
Let's unpack leadership a little bit more, since that's some of the heart of what you care about and care about cultivating in people. When you think about what makes a good leader or a strong leader, or what kind of leader fosters a healthy organization or healthy business, what are your kind of, these are the core essentials of who a leader needs to be successful in leading a happy, healthy team. What do you come back to? Like, what are the things that you sort of always come back to in your conversations with leaders?
Yeah, it's funny because, so when somebody approaches me about coaching, it's not necessarily because they think that there's something that's not working with their leadership, which is interesting, right? Like hardly anyone comes to me and says, I don't think I'm leading the right way. But the themes that do keep coming back that then will lead us to talk about leadership. But I'll start with the themes that come up. There's this transitioning from doing technical work to becoming a manager of humans that is very painful for these founders or execs. And when they look for help, that's sort of...
I know that story.
Yes, they're suffering. And sometimes it's even as explicit as, I don't want to be leading. I'd rather be coding all day. And then I have to look at them and go, but you did decide to found this company. So what do we do, right? What do we do from here? So there is a period of grieving, or maybe someone else has a less dramatic word, but I kind of see it as a grieving of having to let go of being the most technically savvy person in the room and now being a leader of people and saying, oh, now I'm going to hire some really technically savvy people who are probably going to surpass my knowledge, because my job is not to be that person anymore. It's something else. And then we have to get to work on that something else, which is learning new skills of leadership. They come to me because they're stressed, overwhelmed, they have anxiety. They don't know how to manage their internal emotions that are coming up inevitably in their business. And there's this kind of surprise of like, oh, I should be more rational about these things. And I don't know how to deal with all this internal stuff. There's imposter syndrome, which is like a hushed, whispered behind the doors thing that comes up, because we don't tend to think of founders as struggling with something like that. And especially, I work with mostly men, and I'd like to dispel the myth right now that men do have imposter syndrome as well. And there's this sort of shame around feeling that way. And it's because they've been so talented their whole lives. They've been achievers. They've been recognized for their technical ability. And then they find themselves really struggling at becoming a manager of people in this new role that they have now.
So the point of pain, it sounds like, for a lot of the founders that you're working with is this transition from being a solopreneur or a champion coder to running a business and to taking care of people and to really having to morph into this new identity and letting go or grieving, as you say, of these key components of the past identity and working into a new set of skills that they just might not be very good at the beginning.
Yes, exactly. And you hit the nail on the head. And that really is what I bring them back to, right? Because then they go into this panic mode of like, oh crap, now I have to be a leader. What does that mean? And then, yeah, it's getting them to see that there's nothing wrong with you. You just haven't learned these skills yet. You went to school or you got your training to become a brilliant, technically savvy person. And now you just have to learn these other skills. But they are learnable, they are trainable, just like everything else. But yes, absolutely, there is that period in the beginning where there's a little bit of feeling like a failure, or a feeling of, well, if I'm so smart, why don't I know how to communicate effectively right off the bat?
And what are those skills gaps that you observe? It sounds like communication is one, but the things that need to be learned in order to make that transition successful.
Yeah, so now we're getting into what leadership is, right? It's not so much about what you're doing. I like to tell them, we start with how you're going to be. We start with learning to know yourself, essentially. I mean, if I could talk about one of the key skills that will help ensure well-being as these folks are transitioning into leaders, it's know thyself. What are your values? What are you driven by? Okay, I get it. You want a business that's going to thrive, but where is that coming from? What is that need that needs to be fed inside of you that is driving you to build this business and to want it to be successful? And then the other piece of that is, what are your triggers? I think that's one of the most important leadership skills that anybody could learn. It's identifying when we're reacting, not to the other person or to what the other person did, but because of one of our buttons being pushed.
So asking the question, how are you going to be in the presence of others or in the presence of your team? And thinking about that both as what's driving you and what might inhibit you or trigger you. When you say trigger, you're connecting to sort of emotional reaction that a founder might have to an employee or a client that may have much more to do with what lives inside of that founder than what's actually being done by the other person.
Yes, exactly. I think that as we become better and better at knowing what our emotional triggers are, and we can sit in a meeting and maybe make a pitch for an idea and have somebody reject it, right? And notice our reaction to that rejection. And instead of going, I'm pissed off because that person rejected my idea, but we go, huh, yeah, I'm noticing right now that I'm having a reaction because, yeah, I'm someone who likes to feel like I'm being heard, or I'm someone who likes to feel like I came up with the right answer, right? So if I know myself and I know these little sort of, I mean, some people might call them idiosyncrasies, right? Or little quirks. If I know those things about me, then I can take a step back when I'm having a reaction and go, oh, maybe it's not exactly about what the person did or what was said, but maybe it's just my need for being seen that's being touched in a very sensitive way right now. And so then what that does is that it allows us to focus on our energy on moving the conversation forward instead of dealing with all this internal mayhem that can happen if we're making the other person wrong or making the situation wrong. So it's really when we learn to manage those internal things, we can save that energy and focus it on moving forward instead of focusing on the internal storm.
Some of these internal dynamics are pretty, in my guess, could be pretty culturally nuanced. And you've been working with clients from around the world, and including multicultural teams where people from different cultural backgrounds are trying to hash these kinds of things out together. What have you observed about the differences in leadership in the different cultural communities that you've worked in?
Oh, I love that question, because I think that people nowadays feel that because the world is so interconnected, we're all operating sort of in the same way. And it's not yet there. And I would say, yes, absolutely, there are differences between how the founders in different cultures are operating. But it's not so much from, oh, well, you know, a founder in a patriarchal society will tend to be more authoritarian. It's not so much that. I think the difference comes more from the environments and the cultures that the founders are operating in. So they get affected on two levels. One is these founders will get affected in the way that they're socialized to be a leader, for sure. We will see a little bit more of resistance to the concept of the servant leader, for instance, in countries that are more patriarchal. And I see this in France and I see it in India. But even if you have a founder who studied in the US and has definitely adopted these more modern concepts of leadership and goes back to work in their country, they're still being affected by the second level, which is society around them is still operating differently, right? So, and I saw this with a client of mine who's based in France recently. So he was very much about this idea of, yes, the servant leader, my job as a leader is to make sure that my people have an amazing environment to work in. I am here to basically provide them with whatever they need to thrive, right? But then his employees are still socialized in the French context, which is very patriarchal still in the work culture. And so he was struggling with wanting to give freedom, wanting to give autonomy, but that was being received by his employees who had been trained in an environment where autonomy and freedom are not necessarily given. Does that make sense?
Sure. It's sort of a misfit between the kind of leader that someone aspires to be and the kind of leadership that the team needs or is looking for or understands.
Exactly. So there is a training period, right? Because he does understand that his company is going to run better when everybody takes autonomy and has freedom and has this sense of ownership, right? But he was struggling with that, making that transition with people that he was onboarding. So the differences are very real. But one thing that doesn't change, Sherry, is, and I'm sure you've seen this too, it's humans, I don't care if you're from Peru or India, have a basic need and desire to be seen and valued and understood and appreciated. And that is, I would say, universal. I see it everywhere. With all my founders, it's one of the things that comes up again and again. It's, okay, well, just remember your employees, the people who are making up your team, they also have these needs that need to be filled. And how do we make sure that happens? And again, depending on the culture where they're operating, that may be more or less visible, but it's definitely there.
Those universal desires to be treated with respect and kindness and have clarity about what your role is, what's expected of you. Seems like on some level so easy to sort of recognize, but maybe surprisingly difficult to implement.
Yeah, it can be.
So when you think about your own journey and, you know, the work that has gone into running your coaching and consulting business, all of the effort that you've put forward, what have been like your key decisions or practices that you think have been important to cultivating your own success?
Yeah, I love this, decisions and practices, because at the end, we're all responsible for how we're going to run our life. I would say one of the big ones has been discipline. And I know that word sounds so boring, but I actually get really excited about having discipline in my life, setting up things in a way that I make sure that I know what certain processes and systems need to be in order for me to thrive. I have a morning routine that I try to be as much of a stickler as I can, just to have some foundations or some anchors that help me remember, even when things are difficult or when things are changing very quickly, they help me remember that I still have control over certain things.
What are the elements of your morning routine that kind of ground you?
It's the same every day. I meditate in the morning. I drink a glass of water with lemon to flush out my system. I have a healthy green smoothie. I'll take some time maybe to journal and think about what my intention is for the day and three things that I'm grateful for. Maybe read if I feel inspired, or if I'm feeling uninspired and I just need something to kind of get me going for the day, I will exercise in the morning as well. And so that all takes about an hour. And I know some people are thinking, I can't take an hour. Like, that's too much. I know that people have families and things like that. But even 20 minutes, where maybe you do the two same things every morning that really provide grounding for you, is super useful, because it really helps us set the mood for the day instead of the day coming on to us and telling us how it's going to be.
The day's slapping us awake.
Exactly.
Your routine is striking in that it really includes those core elements of caring for your body, caring for your soul or your spirit, caring for your mind. And, you know, it sounds like a very holistic way to begin the day and integrating those different pieces of yourself right from the beginning of the day.
Absolutely. And I have to tell you, ever since I implemented the routine, the way that I move about my day has completely changed. The way that I feel about my day has completely changed. There's a certain serenity that comes from me deciding in the morning what my intention is for the day, that somehow really translates into me living up to that throughout the day. So it really has made a huge difference in my life. It gives me that anchor that I can go back to. Even if things go crazy in the afternoon, I can go, what's my intention for today? Right.
What's the one thing, one word, one theme I'm trying to accomplish?
Exactly. And that is so soothing.
So you are getting ready to have your first child. Is that right?
Yes.
How are you feeling about that?
I am feeling a lot better now than I was at the very beginning, because again, I went and got a lot of support, and I was clueless. Like, I imagine a lot of women before we're in this situation, there's not much that we know about pregnancy and parenthood. We don't think about it so much until it's time. So I've been preparing myself, surrounding myself with the support and knowledgeable and supportive people to help me prep for this, and me and my partner, actually. So it feels really good at this point, and I'm ready, and I'm in a place also where in my life where I am ready for this. And it was just sort of what we were waiting for. So very excited.
Well, congratulations. Yeah, it's wonderful. And it will be interesting to see just how that new phase of your life integrates into your work and to you know, your morning routine and the strategies that you have developed personally to be integrated and whole.
Yeah. And you know, that's a really good point. The fact that I have been able to have this discipline and implement these routines or navigate change as it happened in my life, it has really taught me that everything is learnable and trainable. Everything is, I think it's Marie Forleo who has this saying. She says, everything is figure outable. And I really do believe that. I think that no matter what comes our way, if we are ready to be flexible and adaptable and ready to learn, we can figure it out. Always, always, always.
And that's a lovely openness to bring with you into a new transition, right? This idea that everything is learnable, everything is figureoutable, whether that's a founder who's making the shift to managing people from being a coder, or whether it's someone who's been driven and successful in a career to like integrating now what it's like to be a parent into that new sense of self and identity.
Absolutely. And I would say too, for founders, and this is something that I'm constantly reminding them as I'm going through a big change myself, I'm running myself, it takes a village and we all need the right support, right? So I tell my clients, who or what do you need for the support right now, right? Like, I have a business coach. I've joined group programs. I have mentors. I have an accountability buddy. I have a personal trainer. And then I say to them, what do you need for your life to work? Because you don't have to figure it out or do it all by yourself. It takes a community. And that's something that a lot of times we forget, right? We think that we're carrying everything on our shoulders. And I see that very much with these founders. I have to be everything to everyone and I have to figure it out on my own. And it's a really great reminder to go look around you. How do you build the community that's going to support you in making this big change? Because they're there.
Yeah. And you don't have to be good at everything. There are plenty of other gifted people in the world who can come alongside and help to supplement or accent what you're already good at.
Absolutely.
Well, that feels like a really lovely place to leave our conversation. But is there anything else that you want to say to our audience or that sort of is on your heart or mind?
Yeah.
Just ask you the big, broad, open-ended question. Anything you want to say.
Have a fierce commitment to know what your best and highest value is in this world and go and focus on that. I would say that's the best way for any of us to be, right? Again, that sense of I have to be everything and I have to know everything and I have to be the one with all the right answers. But I would say to myself, to my clients, which is what I always tell them, what is your best and highest value? And focus on offering that to your company, to your team, and to the world. And go and pursue that fiercely.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Zen Founder. Our theme song is A New Beginning by bensound.com, used under Creative Commons.